In 1996, I was the head coach at Brigham Young University, and I got a call from my dad who said my brother had been murdered by DuPont. And it just infuriated me to just no end. And I think I destroyed everything in my office. Wrestling will never die. There will always be guys out on the front lawns and, you know, wrestling each other. No matter what the administrators do, no matter what the committees do, wrestling will be around forever. It's been around thousands of years. It's going to be around till the end of time. It's just the people in power are the problem. And they're just making dumb decisions. They just don't think big enough. You know, I guess me coming up with, you know, a movie and getting Channing Tatum to play me and an A-list director, it's not big enough for them. So blackball me.
This is the ex-pugilist John Peretti, and you are listening to No Holds Barred with Eddie Goldman.
Hi, I'm Mike Thomas, founder of First Nations Taekwondo Mixed Martial Arts and former president of the International Fighting Championships, and you're listening to No Holds Barred with Eddie Goldman.
This is Roberto Lamora for America Top Team, and listen to No Holds Barred with Eddie Goldman.
This is Kit Maligro, you're listening to No Holds Barred with Eddie Goldman. That's the best show in the world.
Hello, everyone around the world. Once again, this is Eddie Goldman on No Holds Barred. The story of Mark Schultz is legendary enough that it warrants a book and movie of its own. He started wrestling in high school, mainly, as you'll hear in this interview, which was recorded by phone Saturday, mainly to learn how to beat up his older brother, Dave Schultz. He then became an incredible success in wrestling, as did his brother Dave, winning in 1984 an Olympic gold medal in freestyle wrestling, along with two other world championships, winning three NCAA Division I wrestling titles at Oklahoma, and later, in 1996, going into UFC 9 in a fight against Gary Goodrich on less than 24 hours and winning. He also, as you will hear, got involved with submission grappling and was involved in promoting various styles of submission wrestling. But those are not the only reasons that he is being portrayed by the actor Channing Tatum in the upcoming movie Foxcatcher. He will be portrayed in that movie because this will be a dramatization of the events surrounding the murder of his older brother, Dave Schultz, by the multimillionaire John DuPont of, yes, that DuPont family, on January 26, 1996, and the events leading up to that and the subsequent events. The film is being distributed by Sony Pictures Classics. Its release date is now set in the U.S. for December 20th of this year, and it will be starring, as I said, Channing Tatum as Mark Schultz, Mark Ruffalo as Dave Schultz, and Steve Carell as DuPont. The director is the Oscar-nominated and highly regarded Bennett Miller, who directed the films Capote and Moneyball. The discussion we had with Mark Schultz on Saturday covered an enormous range of topics. Neither of us has seen the film, although he, of course, was involved in its production. And we expect in the coming weeks there to be screenings of this, with, of course, as I said, December 20th, the day that this will be released to the public. But the discussion with Mark Schultz not only dealt with those events, but his views, which I think are very important to understand, involving the state of wrestling, the importance of submission wrestling, and so many other different issues. Before we get to this lengthy and really important and interesting discussion with Mark Schultz, a word from the sponsors of No Holds Barred.
No Holds Barred is brought to you by Main Fighting Championship. One FC is the nation's largest and most prestigious mixed martial arts event. One FC features the best Asian fighters and has initiated the One Asian Partnership Network, which includes most of the major MMA promotions and MMA gyms in Asia. For more information, go to their website at OneFC, that's OneFC.com, and BZ.com, your number one source for exciting auction shopping and outstanding deals on just about anything. Top-rated, most trusted auction site online. Where do you shop? BZ, that's BEEZID.com. And American Top Team. Whether you're a beginner or a champion, train with the champions of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, boxing, wrestling, grappling, and mixed martial arts at American Top Team. Check out their website, AmericanTopTeam.com.
And the first annual Liberty Bell Classic East Coast King of Catch Tournament, organized by the North American Catch Wrestling Association in conjunction with Scientific Wrestling. This catch wrestling tournament will take place Saturday, August 31st, 2013, at the Klein JCC, 10100 Jamison Avenue, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 19116. No points, no politics, only submissions and pins win. For more information, go to their website at nacwa.weebly.com.
Those are our sponsors. Make sure to support them because they make it possible for you to listen to No Holds Barred for free.
And now, from New York on the World Wide Web, it's No Holds Barred with Amy Goldman.
Hello, everyone around the world. Welcome back. This is Eddie Goldman, No Holds Barred. In my opinion, Mark Schultz is somebody that always should be in the news, an Olympic champion, a world champion at freestyle wrestling, three-time NCAA champion, someone who was 1-0 on one day's notice, by the way, fighting back in 1996 in UFC, who's been a coach, who's been around for a long period of time. Yet he's going to be in the news a lot more in the coming weeks and months with the new movie coming out called Foxcatcher, which deals with the murder of his brother, Dave Schultz. Mark is portrayed in the movie, and it discusses the situation with DuPont, who was convicted of the murder of Dave. We have Mark on the line with us. We're going to talk about what he's been doing and a little bit about the story. And Mark, once again, welcome to No Holds Barred.
Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate it, buddy.
Glad you could be with us, and I have a feeling with the announcement that the movie is coming out in December. I think it's Sony Pictures Classic, and the publicity is, from what I've been told, is going to be starting in the next week or two with the graphics and the posters and the final editing and all that stuff going on. I know you haven't seen the movie. I haven't seen the movie. But everyone that I have spoken with that has seen the rough cut of it has been very, very impressed with it. So just give us a little background into what led to this finally becoming a movie.
Well, in 1996, I was the head coach at Brigham Young University. And I got a call from my dad who said my brother had been murdered by DuPont. And it just infuriated me to just no end. And I think I destroyed everything in my office and went home, turned on CNN, and watched the standoff between DuPont and the police surrounding his mansion. And then previous to that, I had an experience. I was sitting at home one day, and I got a phone call from some guy, and he said the best jiu-jitsu fighter in the world is in town. Do you want to fight him? And I thought, what are the rules? And he was trying to intimidate me. He said, there are no rules. And I thought, excuse me one second. And I thought, well, what are we going to bite each other's throats out, gouge each other's eyes out? What do you mean there are no rules? But what am I going to do? I said, okay, fine. You tell him to meet me a week from Thursday in the BYU wrestling room, and we'll go at it. So a week goes by, and I get up there, and it's Hicks and Gracie. And he had these thick cauliflower ears. He had his head shaved. And he had this long ponytail in the back that was braided. And he looked like the guy from Kumite in that movie. Real intimidating looking guy. And I knew he was tough because he had cauliflower ears. So I was like, man, I don't know what I'm getting into here. But he saw me and he goes, are you the guy? And I go, yeah, I'm the guy. Are you the guy? Yeah, I'm the guy. And he goes, well, what I do is punch and kick and elbow and knee and headbutt and stuff like that, but we're not going to do that today. We're going to do submission grappling until one of us taps out. So I was relieved there wasn't going to be a homicide that day. And he just stood in the middle of the room and said, you know, kind of gave me the come on, let's go signal. And I shot in, took him down. I had him in a cradle for about 20 minutes. And finally, my grip gave out from having him down so long. But I thought, don't you have any pride? Get off your back. You're being pinned. But, of course, he didn't care, you know. He's just laying there waiting for me to get tired. And then he finally tried a triangle, which I kind of gave it to him in a way because I didn't know what he was doing. And then I found myself tapping out. And I go, wow, this is great. Man, I've never seen anything like this. I'm going to go again. And so we went again for about another 20 minutes. Same thing. I'm on top. I'm trying. I'm making stuff up as I'm going along. You know, I've never done submission holds or anything. And I'm on top the whole time. Finally, I thought, well, I've been on top for 40 minutes. Maybe I should, you know, let him get on top, see what he can do on there. So I let him reverse me, and he put me in a rear naked chokehold and tapped me out with that. And I thought, man, this is the greatest thing ever. And so I became friends with his student, Pedro Sauer. And Pedro, thank God, let me become his student. And Pedro taught me all these submission holds from jiu-jitsu. And I take jiu-jitsu from him for 3 years. And I also took jiu-jitsu from another guy for a small amount of time. His name was Walt Bayless. He was extremely tough. He invented his own style. He had great leg locks, great heel hooks, and ankle locks and stuff, which, you know, the Brazilians didn't really do that much because it was against sport jiu-jitsu in Brazil. So anyway, I trained with him for a while, and then I went to Detroit. Pedro called me and asked me, Dave Benito, the heavyweight wrestling champion from Canada, wants to come down and prepare for the UFC. Wants you to train. Will you train with him? I said, yeah. So we trained for like 2 weeks straight, and I don't think he took me down. But one time I took him down, I broke his hand, and I felt bad. I took him to the hospital. And the doctor said, if we put a cast on, you won't be able to fight. But if we put a plate in, you will. So I said, Dave, I'm going to go to Detroit to protect you in case you get in trouble. I'm going to throw the towel in. And so I went to Detroit to be his corner man, and he showed the doctor at the UFC his hand. The doctor said he couldn't compete. I went to the promoters and asked if I could take Dave's place. We started negotiating a contract. We came to an agreement the morning of the fight. And, you know, 8 hours later, I'm fighting in the octagon against Gary Big Daddy Goodrich, who I have tremendous respect for. He's one of my Facebook friends, by the way. And then I herniated my back right after that. And you know, I'm 36 years old now. And the BYU president called me into the office, said, Mark, there was a lot of publicity. They put me on the cover of the Salt Lake Tribune, on top, blood on the mat, and a lot of the LDS women got offended, wrote the president, said, we don't think it's becoming conduct of an LDS member to turn another one of God's children into hamburger. And he said to me, he called me on the carpet, he said to me, this isn't what we're about here, Mark. You can keep your job at BYU, but you cannot fight. And so I had 3 kids, and I needed the health insurance, so I gave up fighting. And it was about time for me to give it up anyway. I mean, my back had herniated, and I was 36, and it was about that time anyway, but it was great because I ended my career going out a winner, which is what I always wanted to do. And, you know, until 1988, until I fought in 96, I had always felt bad because I lost in 88, mainly because of DuPont and his negative influence on me and just the whole program there at Foxcatcher wasn't anything like I thought it was going to be. And, anyway, what was the question again?
Well, we you answered that. We moved on to a few more of them that I had because you took us up to the UFC 9. I mean, I remember being there in Detroit, and that morning I went to the arena to see the Octagon. It was one of the first UFCs that I was covering. And I saw you, they had you then sort of showing you around and discussing, you know, whatever you were discussing to get ready in the fight. And I called Mike Chapman, who was then running the Win magazine, which he had founded. And I said, you know, something to the effect, you're never going to believe who's in the UFC cage getting ready to fight tonight. I said, it's Mark Schultz. And his answer was something like, that Mark Schultz? I said, yeah, that Mark Schultz. And it was just, really an electric kind of moment because nobody really knew what was going to happen, because Goodrich was a guy who was bigger than you. He had more experience in the fighting world, and you going in on such short notice because of Dave Benito's injury. It's just an and then you end up dominating and winning that fight. So it's just, I hope people could find videos of that somewhere if they haven't seen it. But it was just an amazing set of circumstances, because what it did is that early on there was still a lot of debate about how good are wrestlers in MMA, and there were a lot of people were naysayers about wrestlers, and it was a big issue of controversy then, not anymore. But then, you know, old wrestlers are just using their strength and they don't have technique and all this kind of stuff. And you were one of the first people, and you know, that really was successful in that. And there were other people who were gold medalists and world champions and national champions, of course, like a long list of them who've had success. But you were really one of the first ones. I'm trying to think what the actual history was, but I think I'm trying to think if you were the first Olympic wrestling champion in MMA. I'm not sure if there were any other. There was later, of course, there were, but you might have been the first.
I was the first. I have an article. Matter of fact, I think you wrote the article.
There you go. Well, I forget. I'm getting older. I forget. I mean, because I know obviously Kevin Jackson went in, and years later, Kenny Monday went in. That's probably actually later that year. They both got involved in it, and then Rulon Gardner dabbled in it, as Karam Gabbar had like one or two matches, and I think there have been some other examples, but you really opened the door. And other like Olympians and top level wrestlers, you know, when Mark Coleman came in, really started to get a lot of attention. Before then, Dan Severn had a lot of success. There were a lot of people that were really had great wrestling credentials that did, but there you go. If I wrote it then, it was true.
Yeah, you wrote it.
That was probably for Wynn Magazine at the time. That might have been the article I was talking about. I remember the lead up to it. I don't remember the whole article. I'm going to have to dig around and see if I have that.
That
led you to back to wrestling. But the whole situation with let's sort of jump forward now. People remember that it was just such a incredibly shocking tragedy that happened. And it's a kind of story that with all these Hollywood movie people that are out there, you couldn't write a story like what happened there and with the murder of your brother. DuPont was later convicted. He was sent to jail a couple of years ago, he died in jail. And now this movie is about to come out in December. How did you get to the point all these years later to get this story developed as a movie? What was your role? Because I understand they have an actor playing you in the movie, and you're one of the key, maybe the key protagonist in the movie.
Yeah, Channing Tatum is playing me. Mark Ruffalo is playing Dave. Steve Carell is playing DuPont. And the way I got this story to this great director, his name is Bennett Miller. And with all due respect to every other director out there, I think Bennett Miller may be the best director in the world. He made a boring statistical book, I thought, by Michael, somebody about baseball called Moneyball, and turned it into this incredible movie. Moneyball, I just thought, was amazing. And for Bennett Miller to be snubbed at the Oscars for Best Director, I mean, he wasn't even nominated, I thought it was a crime. I mean, it was just, I can't, anyway, after I won the UFC, I retired from competition, and I thought, you know, nobody really knows what I've been through in my life. So I should write that down, everything that I did. And it was more like, okay, I was born, I went through my childhood in about 2 or 3 pages, and then I got to the high school gymnastics part where I won the California State High School, Northern California High School Gymnastics All-Around Gymnastics Championship. And it became a really good base, a real foundation for wrestling. As a matter of fact, I would recommend anybody that wants to go into wrestling or any other sport to get into gymnastics first, because, you know, look at gymnasts. They're the greatest acrobats in the world. They've got incredible balance. They've got an incredible sense of awareness. They never get dizzy. They're just the best athletes. So I went from gymnastics to wrestling, and then I was able to improve really fast based on a combination of two things. One, I was a gymnast. And two, I happened to be born into a family of the greatest high school wrestler in history. And to give you an idea how great Dave was, when he was in high school, he competed in the Great Plains Championships. And he got to the finals against 2-time NCAA champion Chuck Yagla, who was also the NCAA outstanding wrestler that year. And Chuck was beating him, I think, 3-1. And Dave caught him with a step-around body lock, I believe, and pinned him. And that qualified you for the Tbilisi tournament, which is basically the Russian national championships. And they've got 10 guys per weight that could all win the Worlds. So it was really the toughest tournament in the world back then. It's not as tough right now, but back then it was the toughest tournament in the world. And Dave, they didn't even want to take him. The executive director of the AAU, which was national governing body back then, Lou Koppel, said, no, we're not taking Dave. Him beating Niagara was a fluke. There's no way. And Dave, a lot of people got together, complained. You'd have to take him. He qualified. So they reluctantly took him on a trip. And Dave won a silver medal at Tbilisi. And no other American won any medals, or maybe somebody won a bronze, but he did better than every other American. And then he came back to the United States, and he missed all of his state qualifying championship tournaments, so he didn't qualify for state, but everybody knew how great he was. So my coach, Ed Hart, at Palo Alto High School, petitioned the California State Championships to allow Dave to compete in the California State Tournament. But since he didn't make weight, they had to wrestle him up a weight class from his normal weight. So he went up a weight to 165 and just demolished everybody. His closest match was in the finals, 12-1. And then he goes to the National Open Greco-Roman Championships. And this is against college guys, Open Division guys, everybody. This is the U.S. Open. And he wins that. And he also gets the award for most falls in the least amount of time. Now, this is the greatest high school achievement senior year in wrestling, U.S. wrestling history. And I'm living in the same house with this guy. And he's just beating me up at will. And I'm a California high school gymnastics champion, or age group gymnastics. And he's just, I have no power over him. So I decide I'm going to learn how to beat him up. So I, you know, the only thing I knew was Bruce Lee movies. So I went and tried and got into, I moved to Medford, Oregon. And I was having trouble with my dad. And there's, you know, anyway, I took Tangshudo, the Chuck Norris style, and I got into a fight with Dave, and he took me down and pummeled me so bad, I thought, this is nothing compared to wrestling. Wrestling is the ultimate martial art. So So I quit Kenshudo, and I decided I'm going to go into wrestling, and if I'm going to push myself as hard as I can. If I die trying, I die trying. But it's either wrestling or death. So I go in, I train so hard, you know, and I'm miraculously, you know, as a junior in high school, my record was 4 wins, 6 losses. My coach kicked me off the team because I couldn't win in competition for some reason. And I transferred back to Palo Alto High School. I was up in Ashland, Oregon. I transferred back to Palo Alto, and miraculously, I didn't win any local tournaments, not even the little 16-team tournaments my entire senior year. And then at the very end of the year, I won the league, the region, the section, and the state. And it was a miracle. It made me believe in God. It was so miraculous. Anyway, I went through that. I got a full ride to UCLA, transferred to Oklahoma, won 3 NCAA titles, beat Ed Bannock to stop him from becoming the first four-timer ever. I have a tremendous respect, admiration for Ed Bannock. He was a 3-time NCAA champion, Olympic champion, a great guy. And
That match, by the way, is on YouTube, and you put it on Facebook, and I put it on my Facebook, too, and it's considered one of the greatest college wrestling matches in the finals in NCAA history. So you really want to see a really exciting match, that's one I certainly recommend people to look at.
Yeah, the most common comment I get when I go to the NCAAs is, you know, you remember that match back against you and Bannock? That was the greatest match I've ever seen. That's the most common comment I get. Anyway, after I got done with wrestling and out to Fox Kitcher and just ruined my life, and I made a comeback in the UFC and went out a winner and hurt my back, I decided I'm going to write my story to tell my kids because they don't know what their dad did. So I sat down and poured out my story. I did it really fast. It's only like 2 weeks. You know, it's only like 60 pages long. And I thought, I'm just going to send this out to some friends of mine and some of my wrestlers. And one of my wrestlers sent it out to his brother, who was getting his master's in business at Columbia. And he got together with the producer of an Academy Award-winning picture. He took my story and put it down in front of Bennett Miller at Bennett Miller's book signing for Capote, which he was nominated for Best Director. And Philip Seymour Hoffman won the Oscar for Best Actor. So at first, Bennett said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm too busy. And then after the book signing, he picked it up, read one paragraph, and said, this is the story I've been looking for the last 6 years. And then I guess he fired his agent. I don't know what he did, but him and I started this process of turning this into a major motion picture from that point on. And as soon as I learned that he liked it, then I was like, yes, I've got an A-list director. I'm going to be able to work with him, and it got made.
And it's now, as I said, it's in its final stages, and it's scheduled for release in December. And I'm not a big movie buff at all, but from what I read, the thinking is that's the time when you release a lot of movies that you think can get nominated for Oscars. So if you release it in December publicly, it's eligible for 2013. Again, I don't know exactly how their calendar works and all of that. And that's going to be, you know, that's also obviously around the time of the holidays. A lot of people have off and can go to movies and all of that. And with top-level people in it, getting a top-level director,
distributor and all of that. I just think it's, I don't know if the movie people understand how much appeal this is going to have, because first of all, everybody in wrestling and even MMA people that are all going to be interested in the story and know, so, you know, most of them know something about it. But it's also the kind of story that it's not going to, from what I understand, it's not going to be a wrestling movie. It's obviously going to have the wrestling theme, but it's going to be a human interest story. And with all these, you know, these fictional crime dramas and this and that and the other thing, this happened. This is real. And again, you couldn't make something, you couldn't write something like this. And all these years later, I'm sure you replayed a lot of these events in your mind, but a lot of everyone else, when you think about it, you just replay the facts and how could it have been different? And you're sort of hoping it ends up differently, and it doesn't, because it happened in the past. And it's an absolutely gripping story, and there are still certain questions that I don't know have been fully answered from exactly what happened.
Well, I got lucky. I found a really good manager. His name's Gary Lewis. He's also Anthony Robles' manager, and he is now working on trying to get a publishing deal, and part of the problem is the speed at which we can get this thing written into publishing form before, so it can be released at the same time as the movie or close to it, and so he's working real hard on that. But I plan on filling in all of the details of what the movie just simply didn't have time to tell. You know, there's parts of the movie that I don't like, but I have bit my lip and told the director, I don't want anything to come between you and your creative process. Make it however you think it's going to be the most successful. So the book will straighten out the misconceptions and these ideas. Some of the stuff that happens in this movie is really weird. And it's based on true events, but there's a couple things that aren't true at all. But I'm going to straighten that out in my book when that comes out.
Have they told you to get ready for premieres and tours and interviews and all that kind of stuff?
Well, they haven't told me to get ready. Obviously, it's coming. And I mean, I'm ready to go right now. You know, he called me 10 minutes before the interview. Here I am.
Yeah, but I know you for a long period of time. You're going to be contacted not by, you know, me who was watching you fight in UFC 9 and all that, but, you know, and followed wrestling all these years. But, you know, the mainstream media, you're going to have movie people that never heard the name Foxcatcher before this and don't know anything about John DuPont, you know, or you or Dave. Frankly, you know, didn't see either of you guys compete. So I'm assuming that this is going to start at some point. I'm already starting to see some interviews with the actors in the movie and with the director, Bennett Miller. But, you know, when this thing gets going, there's, you know, there are going to be all these handlers and all these people around you. That's why I wanted to get you, speak to you early, very early in the process, because, you know, sometimes these, again, I don't know how these people are going to be, but my experience is sometimes that they, you know, they restrict a lot of what you do. But on the other hand, they're going to start having you shuttle because it's supposed to be a media screening coming up in the next several weeks or sometime in New York. I'm sure they'll be doing stuff in L.A. and Hollywood, and so they'll probably want you to be at these things.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I know for a fact that the release date will be December 20th in Los Angeles, So, you know, I'm preparing for that and looking forward to it. I was really, by the way, I was really overjoyed when they told me that Channing Tatum would be playing me. Channing is perfect. He looks a little bit like me when I was younger, and of course. He's a great athlete, a great dancer, obviously. He's got incredible coordination. He learns extremely quickly. He has dyslexia, like my brother Dave, which, and most dyslexics are more intelligent than other people. And he really has a great set of athletic and fighting skills. You know, he was in this movie called Fighting, I think, something. And the guy is truly a remarkable athlete. You know, his handlers would never let him compete in MMA. I mean, he's so valuable a commodity. It would be insane. But I was, when they told me Channing Tatum's playing you, Mark, I looked up to heaven and just, thank you, God. I just knew there couldn't be a better guy. And you know, Mark Ruffalo is truly the nicest guy in Hollywood. I was sitting there watching this very uncomfortable scene where I'm being beat in the 88 Olympics, and my knee's all screwed up, and I'm putting anti-inflammatory lotion on it, and Mark comes over to me, and he starts rubbing this lotion on my knee for me. And I'm sitting there just stunned. He's just such a nice guy. I can't tell you what a nice guy he is. Anyway.
And I've been reading, they've been, I think he wrestled in high school. They've been reading, they've been training with some top-level wrestlers like Bruce Baumgartner and John Jura and some others for, you know, for this movie. So they could, obviously it's a movie about something historical, but so they could hone up their familiarity with wrestling.
Yeah, John Jura and Jesse Jansen were the main coaches for Channing. I think Jura was a little bit more involved than Jesse, but they were both great. And, you know, it's funny, when I saw Steve Carell dressed up as DuPont, I had to take a second look because it was so close to the way he actually looked. I thought he had been resurrected from the dead or something. I was just like, what the heck? Finally, I realized it was Carell, and I was... And Bennett told me, he goes, go over there and tell him how much he looks like. And I'm like, and he, not only does he look like DuPont, he acts just like him, too. He's got his mannerisms down. He's got his facial expressions down. It's really, he just did an incredible, all the actors did an incredible job, I thought.
I think that given all these top level people, the director and the actors, and you're probably more familiar with them than I am, because they said I'm not a big movie buff, but I think with this, I think that even if there are, and you know, we always expect Hollywood when they take historical situations to change things, and I'm not a fan of that, but I think that it sounds like, and again, I haven't seen the screening. They said there's going to be one here in New York where I am in a few weeks, and I hope to go to that. But it sounds like it's going to educate a whole new generation of people, and even people that were around, you know, and active during that time about what really happened with the story. So the end result might be overall positive, even if, you know, we can't expect perfection in anything, but even with Hollywood changing certain things, it might, as you said, when the book comes out, it might bring to light this whole story.
Yeah. it's been a little bit uncomfortable for me to metaphorically strip myself naked for the whole world to see. And the closer this gets to release, I'm getting a little nervous. But anyway, I have a cameo in the movie where I weigh Channing in as me. He has 90 minutes to lose 12 pounds the day before the 80 Olympic trials. And I'm the official that weighs him in. So I don't know if they're going to use that film of me, because Lee Kemp actually plays the exact same part. And they may use Kemp instead. I don't know. But anyway.
They like to do that in movies, have people do cameos who were actually portrayed in the movie. That's sort of a thing that a lot of movies like to do. And I think people like to see that when they see those names in the credits, sort of under, the 40th person in the credits, weigh-in official or something like that. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see whether they do that. Do you think, looking back on this whole situation after all these years, there any lessons that wrestling as a sport should learn from this situation, other than it was a mistake to work with DuPont? Do you think there are any lessons as wrestling continues to struggle to stay in the Olympics? More NCAA programs have been cut down, and fewer weight classes and wrestling in the Olympics, and all the problems that we know. Anything that you can reflect on, having been involved in wrestling for so long?
Well, the thing that hurt me, and I think led ultimately to Dave's death, was the fact that we were unable to make a living competing, because the amateur standing rules. And so we were forced into poverty to have the privilege, whatever, to compete. And against these professional Russians. And USA Wrestling never once offered to help me financially. And, Mike Novogratz has come in recently and, is offering wrestlers money, if they win. And, it's been a great benefit to the guys that have won. But, I was screaming literally at the executive director of USA Wrestling back in the mid to late 80s that, you guys have got to do something. Something's got to change here. I'm working my butt off. I'm killing myself, every single day. I don't have time to work, and you guys are doing nothing to help me, to support me. If I don't have a job working as an assistant coach somewhere, I'm screwed. And that's why I went to Foxcatcher. He was the only guy in the country that was paying wrestlers to compete. And, we were treated like animals. And I mean, it was really unfair. And when I look back at how hard they made it for us, I can't think about it too much, because it's just, if I would have had any support at all from USA Wrestling, even $10,000 a year, I could have survived long enough to continue competing for maybe another 5 years. I could have won another, maybe, who knows, two or three more world titles, maybe. But because of our complete lack of support, it's no wonder wrestling is dying. The people in power are not helping the wrestlers, even the number one guys. And I've been very vocal. I've been very outspoken about this issue. No, I'm on the side of the wrestlers. I'm not on the side of the administrators. And, you know, it's made me somewhat of, I guess it blackballed me in some ways there at USA Wrestling. But I'm really frustrated at, when I think back about how much more difficult how much unnecessarily difficult they made it for us to compete. And then once we won against these professional elections, regardless of our lack of support, they're right there taking credit. Oh, look at how great we did. And look at, we're building up this great USA Wrestling, program. And it just infuriates me. I've decided to support them temporarily while they try to get wrestling back in the Olympics. Of course I want wrestling back in the Olympics. I just don't want the people that are in power to stay in power. And they've made some changes, I guess. I don't know. But they probably hate my guts for saying this, but it's true.
Listen, I agree with you, and I think wrestling it's almost a lose-lose situation. Most people expect wrestling will be retained as part of the Olympic program, but now you have, within FILA, the International Wrestling Federation, the Russian Wrestling Federation, with all the nonsense that goes on there, having the upper hand. You have the rules constantly changing. You have another, they got rid of one set of bizarre rules and put in another set of bizarre rules. You know, now 1 5-point throw or 2 3-point throws can end a match. And on and on and on. They brought back the passivity, which we know is really key for the subjectivity for referees to start giving out points in a biased way. And it's the same, the lack of media, the lack of attention to media and marketing. I mean, for example, they got the World Championships coming up in Hungary in September. There's the World Championships of wrestling and freestyle and Greco and women's wrestling. And how are you going to be able to watch that? Maybe there'll be a webcast that certainly won't be on TV. This is the World Championships. And we're in the dark a few weeks before about how to watch it. So it's the same stuff, which is why I look to, as much as, and I like all these styles, I like watching all this stuff, but as much as I do, I just look to other people trying to, who have a different attitude to developing something. I really think wrestling needs a real professional level, which is going to have to be some style of submission or catch wrestling, in order to survive, because without a real professional level, all these problems are just going to recur every couple of years. Again, even if in September the IOC says, okay, we're keeping wrestling. And then they'll probably drop Greco, and they've already gone down to 6 weight classes. So, how much will have been won?
Yeah, I don't know. I fought the title. I don't want to bore your audience with the whole Title IX issue. I fought that battle for years and years, and I realized, I couldn't win. They dropped wrestling at BYU, and there was nothing I could do about it. And anyway, I tried to, apply for jobs at USA Wrestling. I tried, I think, 6 times. They didn't give me anything. They didn't want me as part of their program. So I got nothing left to lose now except tell the truth about what I really think. So
now that the news is
coming out, they're jumping on my back. Oh, yeah, let's go be part of Mark's movie. It's interesting because some of the people that were the most against me prior to this movie coming out are actually in the movie. It's just, I don't know, but I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I believe in, you know, inasmuch as ye shall forgive, ye shall be forgiven. And I have a lot to be forgiven for, so I decided to, you know, forgive and but not forget.
It's what you got to do. Are you, what exactly is your connection? And as I mentioned, you know, the story of your submission matches with Hickson when you were first finding out about that is really amazing. Do you have any connection with these other styles, or have you been following something? I've been talking a lot about this rebirth of catch-as-catch-can wrestling, where basically you can win by pin or submission, and it's very, very much in its infancy now with small tournaments and seminars that a lot of people getting interested in. And then this is the original style back in the days, you know, 100 years ago, of Frank Gotch and Tom Jenkins and people like that. That was the original style when you had a real professional wrestling that was a very huge popular sport. Then we know, you know, just became predetermined completely. It was even to a certain degree beforehand, and it just fell out of the realm of sport. But a lot of people trying to revive this as a real sport now.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was at BYU and I had my experience with Hickson, every year after that, I think it was 1993 was when I first met Hickson and Pedro. And I put in my suggestion to the NCAA Rules Committee every year was to add submission holds. And, of course, they threw it in the garbage every year. So that was my suggestion. I just thought, you know, we got to do something to counter this Title IX business. We got to do something to make it a revenue sport. And, you know, it just... the people in power are more interested in just maintaining their positions of power than they are in the benefit of the survival of the sport. Unless we do something, it's going to die.
I agree, and that's something I try to work with all these different levels, and you know, it's difficult. That's why I'm looking outside of the organized structure of wrestling internationally and nationally, you know, and that's why I'm looking to see what could happen with these new people, because I agree with you, it may never die. It's been around so long, it may come back, but it's certainly gotten more and more marginalized.
Now I should clarify what I just said. Wrestling will never die. There will always be guys out on the front lawns and, you know, wrestling each other. No matter what the administrators do, no matter what the committees do, wrestling will be around forever. It's been around thousands of years. It's going to be around till the end of time. It's just the people in power are the problem. They're just making dumb decisions. They just don't think big enough, you know. I guess me coming up with, you know, a movie and getting Channing Tatum to play me, an A-list director, it's not big enough for them. So, blackball me. But
well,
the rest of the wrestling world supports me, you know. I have, you know, it's only a very small group of people in power that don't like me. The rest of the wrestlers, the rest of the wrestling community, they're my friends and my fans.
What year, by the way, when you first met Hickson and had those matches, do you remember what year that was?
That was 93.
Okay. So, when you mentioned the triangle, that's, of course, what Hoyce Gracie, a couple of years later, beat Dan Severn with. And jiu-jitsu people knew it, a lot of submission wrestling and grappling people knew it, but it wasn't really as well known till Hoist used it against Severn and got him to tap out. So it's an interesting history there.
Yeah.
So other than writing the book and getting ready for all the stuff coming up and working with the people on the movie, are you doing any active coaching now or training people?
No, I just got back from California where I had an experimental stem cell procedure done on my knee because the cartilage is gone and it's inflamed and hurts. I can't run. And so I'm not really, I am doing some coaching at the local high school here, but mainly I'm doing motivational speaking. I just signed with Kepler Speakers, and that's a lot easier on my body than coaching. If it wasn't for my knee, I'm sure I'd be doing a lot more coaching. And the hope is that this procedure works and I'll be good as new and back to coaching a lot more. I have a lot of people inquiring about getting me for clinics and stuff. And I want to do it. I just don't want to suffer through it for, you know, a couple $1,000s, you know. Wrestlers are so poor, you know, they just, doesn't matter who you are, you're the greatest wrestler in the world and can't make more than a couple $1,000s on a clinic.
And that's why so many people have gone into MMA.
Yeah. And wrestling, don't get me wrong, you know, wrestling is the most valuable foundation. You know, I personally think it's a combination of gymnastics and wrestling and jiu-jitsu, boxing, and Muay Thai. But the wrestling is the foundation, the greatest foundation, primarily because of the conditioning. You know, the wrestlers are the greatest conditioned athletes in the world. And if you don't have the gas to execute your techniques, it doesn't matter what you know. That's why wrestlers can learn submission holds just as easily as they can learn a switch or a stand-up. So making the transition from wrestling to grappling and MMA, striking is a little bit different because you're pushing outward instead of pulling inward. But when it comes to grappling, you know, wrestlers can learn grappling almost instantly. So the combination of wrestling combined with Brazilian jiu-jitsu makes an even better martial art. And, you know, cross-training, everybody is now cross-training, you know. Jose Aldo, and these guys are incredible cross-training athletes. So it's a new sport, but the guys that have the conditioning foundation of wrestling, you know, I think if wrestlers could compete in one other sport, it would probably be running. That's what we do all the time. Just running around. I think I calculated I ran around the world one time. If you added up all the times. It's the thing I hated to do the most, so that's what I did the most.
Well, I think people are really looking forward to the story and the book and all of that coming out. I know, as I said, when I heard that this was finally ready to go and the caliber of the people that they had involved in it, I said, okay, I got to really start to focus on it, because I think there are going to be a lot of lessons that people are going to discuss about this. And again, just learn the human interest story. You're very active on Facebook. Is that the best way online to get in touch with you? I know we talked a little bit about Twitter, but I think you're right now doing a little bit more on Facebook.
Yeah, I saw the movie The Social Media, or The Social Network. And until then, I didn't even know what Facebook was. And then after that, I realized Facebook is actually based in my hometown of Palo Alto. So I became a fan and got on there and started building up friends and stuff. Now I realized just how damaging it can be and how much it can hurt people. I deactivated my account like 4 times, but now that this movie's coming out, being told by my manager, I gotta keep my Facebook presence alive and, just turn it either into a fan page or just, I don't know. I don't know what I'm gonna do. Maybe make a personal account for just my close friends or something. I don't know. But yeah, I'm big on Facebook. I put all of my YouTube videos on there. There's one speech on there, I think. Some articles on there. And I got a lot of great friends that don't want me to leave. So I'm debating right now what to do about that.
Yeah, that's the problem is that there are a billion accounts on Facebook all around the world. So that's one of the key reasons people have to use it. It's, you remember years ago there was the Yellow Pages and business, I guess they still have the Yellow Pages, but all this stuff is online. And I think people would have, had been in the Yellow Pages back in the day, in the various other directories. And it's sort of, I kind of view it like that, but I'm on it. I have, I had to open up an Eddie Goldman 2 because Eddie Goldman 1 had reached a 5,000 friends limit, and I opened up a page and all that stuff. But I don't like it. I like Twitter a little bit better. So, we shall see what's happening with that. And I know you just started a Twitter account, too, so people could follow you on that, too.
Yeah, I've got it. I just need to start using it more. I'm gonna try and follow the lead of people that have gone before me and what they do and just do what they do. Twitter will be part of that.
Yeah, one of the key things is particularly people that that follow you, follow them back so you get. You get to see what they write. That's something. Because I just went on your thing and followed you. So when you start to follow people back, then you could have this conversation.
Yeah. Okay. So,
because I see a lot of people. You're ready. You've been posting certain things. And there are some people you're following. But, given your history and your notoriety, it's probably going to grow pretty fast at a certain point. And then you don't have to follow everybody back, but because you're going to, with the movie and everything, you're going to get like a ton of people following you, but particularly people that and you want to communicate with as many as possible, follow them back. And then, you through your phone or your computer or whatever device, you can follow it and update it. So, and that's...
I don't think your fans are particularly interested in this part of the interview.
Well, yeah, but since it's online, since it's online, it's an issue for people. But let's wrap it up. We've been going a long time. Anything else you just want to add?
No, I guess not. Thanks for thinking of me. And I want to say hi to all my fans. I love all you guys. God bless all of you.
Well, thank you for taking the time out. As I said, we're going to be following as best as we can the developments and with the screening and eventually the premiere of the movie on December 20th. And it should get a pretty wide premiere, and we're looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing you at some of these things. I imagine they're going to be bringing you into New York at some point, so hopefully we could talk again then.
You bet, Eddie. I'd be happy to.
Great. Thanks again. good luck with all of this, and good luck with fighting for what's right in wrestling. Not everybody's doing that, and so a lot of nonsense has been allowed to exist, and you know, we've seen, as you said, the results of it, and we hope to see you soon, pretty soon. And good luck with finishing up the book and all of that.
Thanks, Eddie. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Take care. Bye-bye.
No Holds Barred is brought to you by the Undefeated Championship. NFC is Asia's largest and most prestigious mixed martial arts event. NFC features the best Asian fighters and has initiated the One Asia Partnership Network, which includes most of the major MMA promotions and MMA gyms in Asia. For more information, go to their website at OneFC, that's onefc.com, and bizid.com, your number one source for exciting auction shopping and outstanding deals on just about anything. Top rated, most trusted auction site online. Where do you shop? Bizid, that's BEEZID.com. And American Top Team. Whether you're a beginner or a champion, train with the champions of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, boxing, wrestling, grappling, and mixed martial arts at American Top Team. Check out their website, AmericanTopTeam.com.
And the first annual Liberty Bell Classic East Coast King of Catch Tournament, organized by the North American Catch Wrestling Association in conjunction with Scientific Wrestling. This catch wrestling tournament will take place Saturday, August 31st, 2013, at the Klein JCC, 10100 Jamison Avenue, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 19116. No points, no politics, only submissions and pins win. For more information, go to their website at nacwa.weebly.com.
Those are our sponsors. Make sure to support them because they make it possible for you to listen to No Holds Barred for free.
Now, from New York on the World Wide Web, it's No Holds Barred with Amy Goldman.
Hello, everyone around the world. Welcome back. This is Eddie Goldman, No Holds Barred.
Well, we've got to start wrapping this up. You know what that means? It's closing time here on No Holds Barred. Appreciate you coming on down. Make sure to check out my blog, tgoldman.com, or nhbnews.blogspot.com for a lot about my media activities and links to the social networking sites in which I'm active, including facebook.com/nhbnews and twitter.com/nhbnews. For information on the combat sports from all around the world, as always, check out the ADCC News at adcombat.com. If you want to send me an email, it's nhbnews@gmail.com. Again, I appreciate you coming on down. For No Holds Barred, this is Eddie Goldman.